Bandwidth for Inside the Net is provided by AOL Radio at AOL.com/podcasting. This is Inside the Net with Amber MacArthur, episode 31 for August 9th, 2006. Etsy. It's Tuesday, and it's time once again for another thrilling edition of Inside the Net, where we delve into Web 2.0 and see what we come up with in our fishing net. Amber MacArthur, a good day to you.
Hey, Leo. How are you doing?
Surviving the heat in Toronto?
It's been a hot summer, Leo, and you're lucky you can cool off in California, and I don't think I ever get to say that.
No, it'll be the other way around soon.
Don't say that either.
You guys know how to enjoy your warm weather, though, because you have such brutal winters. The summers are appreciated.
It's true. I think I sat on a patio till 1 in the morning last night with some friends just because it was nice to be outside. And it wasn't cool, but it was still it was the only time that was really bearable to be outdoors.
There was a breeze.
There was a very slight breeze.
Who are we going to talk to today?
I'm so excited about today's interview because I'm a big fan of the site Etsy, which I showed off on Call for Help a couple weeks ago. And we are talking to two of the founders of Etsy, Rob and Chris. And we're going to ask them how two guys came up with the idea to do an online site all about handmade crafts and how to sell them.
I'll take a stab and then I guess Chris can answer it. I like to go on record saying that Chris thought this was going to be an ephemeral idea that we passed over. but Chris and I teamed up about 2 years ago now to make Get Crafty, which was a website for a community of people making stuff, basically, that had been around since the Girl Wide Web way back in 1998. And that site kept growing, and we were watching it, and we'd started our own little web company, graduating college and quickly realizing how useless our BAs were. And so we were doing some client work after we made Get Crafty, and then realized that we hated clients and couldn't do any client work, so we had to make something that was going to be our own. And we had this period where we were going through 10 different ideas a day, basically, and looking at Get Crafty and seeing how everyone was using that site, a lot of the people were posting pictures of things they made and then bemoaning the fact that they were just getting buried on eBay and there was no real marketplace to sell them in. And so our basic premise was that we were going to create a marketplace to sell the goods that was as unique as the goods themselves. And out of that seed grew Etsy in about a month from the idea to the implementation that's up right now.
Yeah.
You don't have anything to add, huh? I have to ask, what were your degrees in?
We have great answers for that, too. Chris, you can take that.
The Gallatin School of Individualized Study at NYU.
Oh.
So we kind of made up our own majors.
But our degree technically is in Individualized Study. We have a BA in Individualized Study.
That's going to get you a good job.
what does that mean?
Good question. I still don't really know.
It means you're a slacker or you are very motivated.
Yeah, you're such a genius that you had to craft your own major. So what did you guys focus in? Was it this kind of stuff? Was it the web interactivity?
I focus on classics and philosophy. I went to a total of 5 different colleges, so NYU is just kind of wrapping up my long and variegated career. And never studying web design, never thought I would end up doing this. I remember being at art school and I was doing painting, and I'd go down and check my email once a week, and I'd see all the graphic designers down there, and I'd just point at them and say, losers. But now that's what I do.
I am a fine artist. I use e-paint. And how about you, Chris? What was your specialty?
Well, I think the official title of my concentration was Art, Computer Science, and Video Game Design.
Oh, wow.
So I kind of wanted... was into coding and really into games primarily, but I also worked a lot, played around with animation, like both 2D and 3D. But I met up with Rob, and when I met Rob, he knew nothing about computers. It was pretty much zero, and he's learned quite a bit since then.
Isn't Rob the one who you told us before we started the interview who built the first, a computer box?
Yeah, that was learning from Chris as well. Chris and Chaim, the two programmers, were building their own computers, and I was getting sick of Macs at the time, and I wanted to build my own PC. So building component computers is pretty easy, and I grew up in a wood shop, so I wanted to combine the two skills.
Yeah. So you built a computer out of wood.
Yeah, not the processor.
It's not Gears. That's cool. So you built a wooden case.
Yeah, it's modeled after an old turntable. I can send you a link to it.
I'd love to see it. We'll put a link in the show notes. That sounds beautiful.
Okay. Yeah, I was going to try and create this line of couture computers. So every other thing out there kind of has this higher-end line of fancy stuff that you overpay for. And I figured computers was ripe for it. So.
Well, I see a link here to Etsy, because so you're really a craftsman, among other things, an artist and a craftsman.
Yeah, for me, it has a lot more to do with power tools than I think anyone else on the site.
True.
Yeah, we actually do have a bunch of woodworkers. One of the top sellers on Etsy makes wooden rings that are really beautiful. But in a way, I kind of believe, you know, the saying that everyone's an artist at heart. Well, I think everyone is a crafter at heart, and it really is just going back and figuring out the things that you can make. And my desire for it really grows out of this paranoia of letting other people do things for me. So way back when, you know, I was going to do all the programming behind Etsy as well, and then realized that I can't code.
Oh, you try, though.
But yeah, my crafting has always been, you know, building tables and chairs for myself. It's also sometimes a lot cheaper that way. And then seeing all of these people on Etsy and how they're using it, it's really encouraging as well, because I think, you know, if you go back 100 years, you see everything's handmade, and now you kind of get this Blade Runner future where even the animals are holographs. And so we're going to try and swing it back a little bit the other way and show that artisanal handmade goods can have so much more meaning than the mass-produced stuff that you get all over the place now.
And Chris, what is your involvement with Etsy in terms of being on the design side of things? Did you have involvement in the web design? Because it's a beautiful site.
Actually,
no, Chris.
All of the site design is Rob, pretty much.
Really?
We fight over screens a lot. Like, he'll sketch something up and like bring it to us and see if the logic works.
And so he designs a new code.
Yeah.
Yeah, basically.
What is it written in?
So many different things. I mean, primarily PHP is what does the processing on the top most layer. But then there's a Postgres database, and now we're adding a Python middle layer, and we're dabbling in the buzzword-worthy Ajax right now.
Hmm. Yeah, but nothing's on Rails, and it's not going to be.
There is no Rails. Well, considering our last episode was the interview with the creator of Rails, I think we've covered Rails, so we can do non-Rails.
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting about, I mean, I've just heard concerns
Rails?
About this, the scalability of it. No one knows how to grow stuff like that. And we actually, apparently, over at eBay, since everyone at Etsy who signs up gets their own store, the person in charge of eBay stores, which you have to pay at least $15 a month for on top of your account, sent out an email to everyone saying, go look at Etsy. You know, everyone who signs up gets a store for free. And the result of that was about 10 engineers asking if we had any job positions available. in our West Coast office, and we don't even have an East Coast office right now. But we got a peek into eBay, and what's really interesting is no one's built websites that scale this massively. And just as a web app, eBay is gigantic. It's pushing about 200 different screens, the new build of the site.
Wow.
And even things like Dig are about, you know, 10 screens. So just to give you like comparison of how large the application itself is, and then the amount of dynamic data that we're generating on every page load. It's a lot of uncharted territory, and we've seen PHP scale when, you know, Friendster switched from Java to PHP, the Facebook uses it, and it's a little bit more proven, and I'm not a coder, so I can't back any of this up, but I've just heard doubts about the scalability of Rails to something that's feeding out that much.
It's interesting to hear you say this, because clearly when you started Etsy, you were prepared for it to be a big hit.
No, we weren't. Not at all.
Well, scaling was a key deciding factor in PHP. You must have been thinking, well, we want to make sure we can get big.
Yeah, Rails also wasn't as much as a buzzword when, you know, almost a year and a half ago when we were launching it.
Actually, a big part of it was that I knew PHP best at the time, so I wanted to write in what I felt comfortable in.
Amber and I fell in love with this site. I mean, it is an absolutely stunning site. I mean, not only do you have all this great, and it makes sense. If you've got an artist putting their stuff up, it's got to look good. So you have this beautiful art, this beautiful crafts. And then the most amazing navigational capabilities just blow me away.
The geolocator, shop by color, sampler, the time machine is especially fun, where you can browse by the most recently updated crafts on Etsy.
Yeah, that's Jared Tarbell on Flash. You got to give big props to Jared. Every other reporter out there ignores him. He's doing some of the best stuff, my favorite stuff on the site. I actually tried to get Jared involved with Etsy before we launched the site, but he didn't think we would ever get it built. And so I just really met him through his website, levitated.net, and sent him a lovey-dovey fan letter. And after we launched Etsy, I just sent him a one-line email with the URL saying, you know, we actually built it. And then he was coming to town to speak at Flash Forward, and he came over, we had some drinks, and he was working for Boeing at the time. And he finally, I had these ideas for a shop by color and a geolocator that I wanted him to build, and finally he climbed on board, and so we launched those things after the site itself is launched.
And the site launched in June of 2005, is that correct?
Yep.
And so you've been around for a year. How many people do you have, or how many artists do you have uploading their works?
There's two different questions in there. One is just how many sellers are actually on the site, which is approaching 15,000, and then the total membership right now is approaching 75,000. So it's fun watching it grow.
The sellers is actually at 16 now.
Wow. We don't look at stats.
Yeah. The problem is stats take up processing, precious, precious processing time. And we really haven't been able to compile them or look at them until we just started thinking about them this month, really.
Yeah. So we're working on a whole bunch of new stuff for the site. We're actually recoding the entire back end, and the whole front end is getting a UI makeover. The look and feel will stay the same, but everything's going to be tidied up, especially the shop admins control panel and stuff like that. And Jared's working on this insane multi-user shopping experience, which he calls the Bazaar. And we hope to be giving people peeks at that pretty soon as well.
I think it's an interesting partnership the three of you have here. So it sounds like, Robert, that you kind of get these visions for how you want stuff to work, and then you're fortunate to be working with great people like Chris and Jared to come up with...
Yeah, and Chaim, too. Chaim is the NetOps, the DB admin, the system admin. He's the kind of Atlas underneath everything with all the weight on his shoulders that nobody should ever see, because that means he's doing his job really well.
I think it's kind of unusual, though, because usually it's a technologist who drives all this stuff. And maybe that's not a good thing, because they might be limited by preconceived notions about what you can do or how it should be.
Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely bringing ideas from way outside of the web, into the notions that we have, and I get a lot of ridicule for it from the programmers for some of this stuff, but the other stuff ends up being some beautiful new ways to shop, which in a way I'm amazed at all of the other big e-commerce sites out there. I mean, they just kind of get advanced text search or text-based advanced search, and they stop, and they don't ever look at these new ways that the web can present to go shopping. And we've got a whole bunch more lined up that we're going to be rolling out over the next 6 months or so.
We're actually looking very forward to, after we get all this system stuff done for version 2, we get to go back to playing with toys again. There was kind of a golden age the last few months before we started working on version 2, where we just put out new widgets and toys and ways to shop like every couple weeks, and it was great. We hope to get in that experimental phase again.
And are you guys working, you're working on this full time now, I'm guessing?
More than full time.
More than full time.
Yeah. No, we're working on it half time, 12 hours a day.
Half of all time. Yeah.
But no, we don't have an office yet or anything. We really just use an IRC chat room and our friendships to base all of the development on. And it goes better that way. finally all met up in San Francisco in January of this year. It was the first time the four of us, Chris and myself and Jared and Chaim, had ever been under the same roof together.
Really? Wow.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Jared's out in New Mexico and doesn't like large metropolitan areas.
So, Rob, and you're in Brooklyn. Chris is in Philadelphia right now. Jared, you said in Albuquerque, and Chaim's in, Jersey City, it says on the site? Is that?
Yep. Yeah, right next to the data center.
Oh, he's the one keeping an eye on the servers.
Yeah.
Yes, he is.
What are some of the most interesting things that you've seen posted on Etsy by artists? Because I can imagine that there's quite a few, amazing crafts. So we just looked through the site briefly last week, and there was some beautiful, beautiful stuff on there.
I want to buy everything I see on here. I mean,
oh, you can do that. Please go ahead.
I've got my credit card out.
Yeah. It's actually evolved over time. I remember when we, a month after we first launched the site, I looked at what the top referral words were from search engines and finding Etsy, and one of them was amigurumi, and I'd never even heard of that word before. And so I searched for it on Etsy, and there are about 30 amigurumi dolls, which is a single-stitch crochet doll that they look incredible in the build quality and what they're filled with. I mean, they feel hefty. And so none of us ever knowing what these things were, we decided to have a contest for them and really encourage people to make them for the site. And what's interesting is looking at other e-commerce sites out there like eBay, there just aren't amigurumi dolls out there. So we've always been looking at where the artists who are using Etsy are coming from. And it's not really so much that we're poaching them from eBay, but that we're creating this marketplace that's making these people put the items up there that they otherwise just wouldn't be selling
online.
Well,
it's never existed before. Individual craftspeople can find a market to do their stuff. I think it's a wonderful boon.
Yeah, the emails that I love are the people who send in and say, I put my sewing machine away 20 years ago and I've just taken it back out of the closet again because, they're making clothing that they're selling on Etsy. And I really think that this is just the start of something much larger that can happen that we'd love to be a part of, and we really want to support it as much as possible. Again, it's just, I don't see it like as a revolution or anything, because again, if you look back 100 to 150 years, everything has this artisanal quality to it. And I was just moving. Yeah, I'm actually living out of a backpack right now. And when I was getting rid of all my possessions, if it was mass-produced, it was so easy to get rid of. It had no personal meaning for me. But all the stuff I'd bought off Etsy, I couldn't get rid of it.
Yeah.
And so I think once people, experience that and owning something that's that much more precious, it'll be great, especially for the community as well, because all of these mass-produced, outsourced, cheap-as-can-come goods should get put back in their place.
And how are some of the sellers using the site? Are there people who have quit their jobs and they're doing this full time and making a living off this?
There are.
Yeah, definitely. We have, women who are supporting their husbands off of it. And yeah, the top sellers.
Watch out, Leo.
Get an Etsy sugar mama.
I'm liking this idea.
Really? So they really are. Sorry, go ahead, Chris.
It's the exception now rather than the rule, but hopefully that'll grow. I don't know. I'd estimate maybe like 50 or so make their living off of Etsy now, like completely.
Yeah, we've met a bunch of them because so many of them are from like New York City area, and so we would have them over and we gave them previews of the new build of the site. But they were just telling us how they loved quitting their day job, and one of the girls, her username is Stops and Starts, was going to go live in Europe because she finally could go live in Europe without worrying about having to find a job there.
And what's the motivation behind another redesign in the site? Because it seems so perfect in so many ways.
I mean, I could point out 100 flaws. We're not consistent with the links. They're all different colors. They're not underlined in all places. We're standardizing that. The style sheet, Chris, how big is the style sheet right now?
Oh, don't even talk about the style sheet.
But it's massive.
It's pushing 100K, which is disgusting.
And the style sheet for the new build is like 4K, I think. So there's also just a lot of tools, like the layout of the admin section, which you have to be a seller and logged in to see, is a bit crude. And again, this was like the second website I'd ever designed, so I was just learning as I went. And the shopping experience as well. Little thumbnails tend not to be as good for the buyers to decide if they want to get something or not. So we're creating a gallery way to go shopping. And then just the back end itself, the scalability of it, everything needed to be totally rewritten. Etsy launched on a single server, and then we got boing boinged and quickly realized that we needed more than one server. It's also just making room. Yeah, there's no room to add features on the site right now, which I think is our in the navigational structure, which is probably our biggest problem. Like, we added something like Alchemy, and all it does is it gets a link below the search bar, which is really pathetic. So redesign was much needed.
There's a lot of little things that we see that are changing all over.
And a couple of months ago, you guys got a round of financing. What's your goal with the site? Is it to sell it or just make it grow bigger and you guys maintain control over it? Or what's the plan?
Yeah, our goal is definitely to maintain control of it. We got a lot of various offers from so many different people, and what we ended up doing is keeping the round pretty small and keeping control of the site, and we really did it to get the right people involved and working with Katarina and Stuart from Flickr and Joshua from Delicious. I was just particularly warmed by the fact that these were their first investments, and it meant a lot to me, and looking at how we want to grow Etsy and all the other, you know, Web 2.0 startups out there. I like the fact we're on the East Coast and we're trying to build a sustainable business. You know, this isn't an ad-supported site. And, you know, it's a big goal for us to hit this break-even point, which we hope to do, you know, well before the end of the year, and then just keep growing the business that way. So we've actually just started looking for office space here in Brooklyn, but still a bit tentative on that front.
So everybody might have to move to Brooklyn, or you'll keep working the way you guys
do? Oh, no. I would never make everyone move here.
It's a nice place. It's not Albuquerque, but it's a nice place. I just think that the challenge for you probably is getting people to, ironically, accept the idea of buying one-off goods instead of mass-produced goods. It seems like we have such a, you know, we're comfortable with McDonald's and mass-produced goods, and there might be some discomfort with these one of a kind. Do you find right. that is an issue?
Well, I think it's a balance. My sister came and visited me in New York City a year ago, and her one criteria, she wanted a bag, and it had to be a bag that nobody else had.
Right.
And so there's this big stigma for getting clothes that are unique and bags that are unique, especially amongst the younger kids. So I just look at my younger siblings to learn the fashions of the day.
Are they worried about quality, though? I mean, you know, you're kind of buying sight unseen. I go into a store, I can at least look at this.
Yeah, I mean,
usually price, actually.
It's price, because the prices are very reasonable.
They're super, they're too reasonable.
They're
actually
too reasonable. I think people aren't charging enough. I agree.
Like, my mom went on the site, and we were looking at scarves, and she was like, oh, someone's selling a scarf for $25? That's ridiculous.
Yeah,
and I'm like,
yeah.
Mom, that took them hours and hours to knit by hand. Like, it's $25.
She thought it was too much? I think it's too little by half.
Yeah.
We've been, I've been raised to be a value grubber.
Oh, that's interesting. I think most people looking at this and knowing as I do what the cost of handmade crafts are, your prices seem very reasonable.
Yeah, there's been discussion amongst the sellers on how they're pricing stuff, and I think it'll make an interesting, you know, economic statistical study in a year or so when the marketplace stabilizes a bit.
Yeah, you completely know if it's too much or too little. So,
but if, you know, 50 sellers raise their prices by $10 and then one seller starts undercutting them, you know, they could see that as taking away their business. So.
Did you ever consider an auction model?
Yeah, it was in our heads, but, you know, for an auction site to be successful, you need a ton of users on it. And I thought it would look very sad if there were just all these items sitting there with no bids on them.
Yeah,
that would be very sad.
And that might also increase the undercutting of the costs. Like, right now, people set their price.
True.
And people might take it for whatever they can get then, and they should be compensated for what they're doing.
I agree. Yeah, yeah. And the as I said, I think the prices are very fair and reasonable. I think they can charge more, to be honest with you, but I guess this is what they feel it is the right price.
Yeah.
They're comfortable with it, obviously. They wouldn't be doing it. I think the navigation is kind of the thing that really stands out. That and the beauty of the arts on the front page. And I'm actually, as you are, apparently surprised that nobody's stolen all of these great navigational ideas.
I know.
Well, they're definitely... Yeah, they're not easy to steal, for starters. Just the technology behind them. I mean, Jared's ability to code ActionScript is pretty intense. And I also think that the data set that we have makes those super relevant. I mean, you really wouldn't want to go shopping by color for DVD players. No, just, sure, you know, everything would be silver or black. So I think the reason they haven't been stolen is that, you know, we just have such beautiful data, which is how Jared describes it.
It's really true. They're just gorgeous.
Yeah, and it spans the spectrum and allows us to do all of these playful things. And we're really just getting started with what's up there right now. And my basic philosophy behind it is that whenever a new medium comes into play, you know, when radio came in, it was essentially just filmed talking heads from radio on television. And when film first came in, it was just filmed versions of the stage. You know, the camera was stationary and there were a filming scene coming in.
Right.
And so that the internet is a new medium for shopping, and it really needs to be looked at that way.
I totally
agree.
And so
there are all these ways possible to shop now that are impossible offline.
How do you guys think that it will grow over the next year in terms of how many more people you would get who are sellers and buyers? Do you see it just exploding as the months go on?
Yeah, what I like up until now, there's this D.H. Lawrence quote. He says, slow, light growth. Our growth has been nice and steady, but, you know, it's not some huge hockey stick. It took us 10 months to sell the first 50,000 items, and the second 50,000 items sold in 3 months. So everything's definitely picking up. But it's also helped us on the business side because we need to stay up to date with customer support and everything. But once a lot of the bigger press starts rolling in, I hope there's a hockey stick somewhere down the road there.
Well, 10 months to 3 months isn't bad. For somebody who wants to sell online, how does it work? Do you get a commission, a flat fee? How does that work?
Yeah. Chris, you want to take that one?
Right now, there is a 10-cent listing fee for anything you put up, and that listing remains there for 6 months.
Wow.
And
that's a good deal.
And once it's sold, we get 3.5% of the total sale, minus shipping, of course, and that's all.
Very fair. Very fair. I know if you sell on consignment in a store, a craft, you're going to lose 50% to the store. So
yeah.
3% is
nothing. Yeah.
We wanted to avoid the tiered pricing that you see in a lot of other places. Like some eBay will charge you for having a thumbnail image on your search results and for, you know, having bold text and all that stuff. And we just wanted to kind of level the playing field and make it affordable for everyone.
Another issue might be that crafts-oriented people are less computer savvy. Do you find that you have to do more hand-holding?
It kind of spans the gamut. I'm doing customer support right now, and yeah, some people write in with a one-line question of, you know, how do I get those pictures off my camera and onto your site? And we've actually set up a mentoring program on Etsy, and so people who are a little bit newer to these things can hook up with the more experienced sellers and get a little bit of hand-holding from the community itself. So the community on Etsy is outstanding. I think it's what makes the site right now. We'd be nothing without them. So while sometimes, you know, there's a fair amount of yelling going on, there's also so much support for everybody, and I think they really feel like they're all in this together, and so they're quick to help out faster than we can in a lot of instances.
Yeah, it's really, you guys have done an awesome job. Really, really beautiful. Well, thanks so much for joining us, guys, and we'll make sure that people can check out Etsy.com and do a little shopping, a little original shopping as well. I plan to buy some stuff on here. I've been looking while you've been talking, and I have to say there's a lot of great stuff.
Oh, it's great. I mean, it changes how I will shop for stuff. I mean, I like shopping online, but up to now, you really was always mass-produced stuff, unless you found somebody's website. This really, really enhances what you can get online now, which is great. Really great.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you very much, guys.
Yeah,
and I can't wait to see
us.
The new user interface elements. I mean, that's what's really fascinating. Do you find people use those? Do you have metrics on how people use those?
Yep. It is varied. The tried and true methods of just browsing by category and the simple search are still up at the top.
Yeah.
But it's also, I think, things like shop by color are the first stickiness that people feel on the site, and that's what gets them there.
Right.
And then once they're landed, you know, it's kind of like the helicopter landing pad, then they walk around to the more traditional places.
That makes sense. It attracts their eye and draws them into it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks to Robert Kalin and Chris McGuire. They were great to talk to, and I just love their site so much. I really, really want to go shopping right now online.
You know, I can't decide which is the more beautiful, the site itself or the crafts they have on it. I mean, they both are gorgeous, and I guess it makes sense. If you're going to sell crafts, you better have a really nice-looking site.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. I just love that, you know, we're so used to technology being kind of cold, and then when you go to their site, you get this feeling that there's all these beautiful handmade things, and I've really seen that a lot on the web, so it's kind of a neat place to be.
Yeah. What we didn't ask him, and I'm kicking myself right now, is where the name Etsy comes from.
I know.
It might be ETC. You know, sometimes you say et cetera, you say Etsy, but that doesn't make any sense.
I thought it might be Craftsy or something
Craftsy.
Like that.
Craftsy?
I don't know.
I'm looking at the about Etsy. It doesn't say there. Well, we'll just have to get him back on and ask him again. I really think it's great to support this kind of thing because it is so different and so new. And it's so fresh, and it's just really the kind of thing the web was made for. And I love what Robert said, which is, and I agree with him, that the initial thing people do with a new medium is copy the old medium. And I've always said that the web, you know, magazine people are going to think it's a magazine, TV people are going to think it's TV, radio people are going to think it's radio. It's not. It's a new medium, and more than many sites, they really take advantage of that new medium.
Yeah, they really do. And I think, you know, they make the whole shopping experience kind of fun again in some ways, because I think shopping online, you don't get that sort of tactile feel.
Right.
And not that you can totally get it here, but you do get the sense that there are sort of materials and, you know, unique gifts and that kind of thing. And that's really hard to do online.
Yeah, they need to make the extra effort to get that point across, I think. You're right.
They really
exactly.
do.
Yeah, and they do. All right, Amber. Well, I will see you soon. I'm going off to Alaska. We will record another Inside the Net soon, and we'll have that in the can as I head for my geek cruise. It's actually really geeky cruise. It's a chess cruise.
Oh, boy.
talking about really geeky. But I'll be back in Toronto. And our first Inside the Net at the Drake will be August 29th. And I'm looking forward to that. And we're going to start doing kind of live Inside the Nets from the Drake, which is, I think, probably Toronto's hippest hotel. In fact, we're lucky to get in there because the week after, all the movie stars will be there for the Toronto Film Festival.
Yeah, you're right. So, as long as we don't unhippify it with our geekness, that's the only issue we have.
It's actually funny. I think we mentioned this before in another podcast, but the last time we were there, they were showing movies of the Computer Chronicles in the restaurant. It was funny to see 20-year-old computer TV shows.
And I know one of the bouncers there is a big fan of Call for Help, so maybe it's geekier than they let on.
Aha, the truth comes out. All right, well, we'll see you next time. Thank you for joining us every Tuesday. Don't forget more information about Inside the Net and all the TWIT programming is available online at twit.tv. And Amber does a fantastic video podcast, of course, at commandn.tv, a must-see. That comes out every Monday, right?
Yeah, every Monday.
And we do this little thing called Call for Help. TV show seen in Canada and Australia. I hope you watch it if you can. If you can't, I hope you'll buy an episode or two for 99 cents. It's available on Google Video. Just go to callforhelptv.com and you'll find all of that there. I'm Leo Laporte for Amber MacArthur. We'll see you next time, Inside the Net.